welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working from home on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, February 12, 2021. Officials in the Greater Pibor Administrative Area are appealing for urgent humanitarian intervention to save lives.
The situation in the Pibor administrative area is very bad indeed, because Pibor is affected by three things. Number one is the insecurity, second is the flood. Murlefi for defense on cattle and all their cattle were taken.
And many South Sudanese say radio is their main source of information.
For example, if there's a discussion that is going on in regards to peace, there is always that hour which is given to the people to give in their views on what they think about the topic which is being discussed.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Authorities in the Greater Pibor Administrative Area say thousands of civilians displaced from their homes by floods and intercommunal violence need urgent humanitarian help. The Director for Relief and Rehabilitation Commission in Pibor says the government and relevant aid agencies in the country should intervene to help 30,000 internal displaced persons who need humanitarian aid. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Joshua Konyi, the chief administrator for Greater Pibor Administrative Area, says last year's intercommunal conflicts and flooding left thousands of people vulnerable in the Greater Pibor Administrative Area. Konyi says people were not able to produce their own food due to flooding and insecurity caused by intercommunal clashes. He says many people have no food to eat.
The situation in the Pibor administrative area is very bad indeed, because Pibor is affected by three things. Number one is the insecurity, second is the flood. Murlefi for defense on cattle and all their cattle were taken, and because of that their situation became bad. So the problem now is the issue of food and the issue of shelter materials.
Konyi says since it is the dry season, thousands of civilians who were displaced from their homes by floods and conflict would like to resettle but lack food and shelter materials. He says looming hunger in the area could be averted if South Sudan's leaders restore peace in the country and civilians return to their farms. He says he toured the Greater Pibor Administrative Area recently to educate residents about a recent peace conference held in Juba.
We have been holding what we call Murle Peace Conference in Pibor to preach the resolutions of the peace conference which was held in Juba between Dinkabor, Nuer and Murle. We took our politicians in Juba to Pibor to go and talk to the people. I have taken this to the authorities in Pibor. I have instructed all the chiefs to make sure that any child that was abducted and is there is reported to the authority.
Nyinginyinga Okano Kiro is the Relief and Rehabilitation Commission Director in Pibor.
There is need for the IDC to be supported if there is a way out to other can do. The situation is still alarming the IDC in the areas. The flood has really disturbed the areas where it is submerged. All the boreholes, the clean water, is really mitigation. Then food security is one of the factors also. The shelters and many other things are still very alarming.
Kiro says since Doctors Without Borders, known as MSF, pulled out of the area last year, the health situation has continued to deteriorate for the IDPs. Kiro is appealing to the government and international aid agencies in South Sudan to intervene. A report released by the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs last month says some 8.3 million people in South Sudan are estimated to be in need of humanitarian assistance this year. The UN classifies Pibor County as the only county in catastrophic need. The report also said the humanitarian assistance delivered to more than 6 million people kept many communities from falling into deeper need, but it also noted increased violence against aid workers and assets. The report said the violence prevented hundreds of thousands of vulnerable people from accessing the support they needed. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Bor.
Saturday, February 13, is World Radio Day, and some residents of South Sudan's capital, Juba, say radio plays a great role in connecting them to vital information on the implementation of the revitalized peace agreement and the coronavirus pandemic. Some residents of Juba say radio helps them to discuss issues affecting the country. For VOA News, David Monodanga reports from Juba.
The theme for this year's World Radio Day is New World, New Radio, and has three sub-themes: evolution, innovation, and connection. University of Juba student Christina Nyalelse shares learned what is happening on the revitalized peace agreement, including its implementation. Nyalel says radio reports on the progress or lack thereof on implementing the deal have put pressure on all parties to fully implement the agreement. She urges broadcast journalists to continue to focus the peace process, saying it is the only way to ensure that South Sudan's leaders work to restore peace and stability in the country.
The literature that is being implemented is because it is being reported, and the US radio criticized the slow implementation of this process. It is actually because it is being aired out. That is why they are least implementing the little that they have done. So radio should continue, because if they don't, then the slow motion will still continue and it will become worse.
Peter Khan, an internally displaced person sheltering in the protection of civilian site in Juba, says World Radio Day is about being glued to the radio with the hope of hearing good news about South Sudan's peace process.
The first important thing that makes me tune to the radio is peace. It is the best thing that can happen to everyone in South Sudan. If it succeeds, well and good. But if it fails, that's going to be a problem. We just want peace so that everything becomes fine and people will understand each other and will live peacefully.
Juba resident Tabita Moni says radio has given people in her community the ability to discuss and contribute ideas to issues that directly affect them.
For example, if there's a discussion that is going on in regards to peace, there is always that hour which is given to the people to give in their views on what they think about the topic which has been discussed. Let's say if it's the implementation of the peace agreement, what do the community members think about? So it helps in collecting the ideas of the community to be put into action.
Moni says psychosocial support programs aired on some radio stations across the country also help citizens heal from trauma. Songa David, a resident of Nyakuron, a suburb of Juba, says in a country like South Sudan where most people do not have access to television or newspapers, radio becomes their only source of reliable information.
So as such, we solemnly rely on the radio. So we always tune to the radio to get information. We also tune to the radio to give in our views and our ideas on what is happening in our societies. And especially during these times of the coronavirus, we always tune to the radio to get information about the pandemic.
David says radio has enabled children to learn through interactive radio instruction lessons after the government shut down schools due to COVID-19. World Radio Day, created by the United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization in 2011, is marked all over the world on February 13th. The day is aimed at promoting the medium and encouraging people all over the world to use it. It is also meant to create awareness about the importance of radio and to encourage decision makers to establish and provide access to information through radio. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
A new Human Rights Watch report records how more than 20 African governments are using the COVID-19 pandemic to clamp down on press freedom. The report says Zimbabwe's government, long known for repressing dissent, is one of the worst offenders. For VOA News, Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
The report released Thursday says officials in Zimbabwe are cracking down on journalists, political opponents, health workers, and others who criticized the government's response to the COVID-19 crisis. Jerry Simpson is an associate director for Crisis and Conflict Division at Human Rights Watch.
In Zimbabwe, we've documented a number of incidents over the last year, and our report references three of those. A journalist that was beaten at a checkpoint near a lockdown area. We documented how a journalist was detained for 9 weeks for his COVID reporting. That was between July and November at various stages last year. And finally, we've noted how Zimbabwe introduced the 2020 Public Health Order Act in March, which threatened up to 20 years in prison for fake news reporting on public health matters.
Samson Takawira is a journalist with an online media outlet in Zimbabwe called 263 Chat. He is one of two journalists arrested last year for interviewing three opposition activists who were reportedly tortured by state security agents.
Our arrest served as a reminder to all other journalists, all other media people, not to pursue the story, because obviously this was a ploy to silence the people. This was a ploy by government to hinder its citizens from knowing the truth, what really had transpired to these ladies. No wonder why, even their bail conditions, they were not supposed to speak to the media.
Elasto Mugwadi, the head of the government-affiliated Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission, confirmed that his organization had received complaints about abuses raised in the HRW report.
There were a few complaints when this was being applied. The robust approach in enforcement by the police. So generally, I think excessive enforcement. This is a continuous process. We are also not stopping, monitoring. We are still carrying on.
Simpson of Human Rights Watch mentioned Uganda and Malawi as other countries where authorities have cracked down hard on journalists trying to cover the pandemic.
For example, in Uganda, where security forces killed at least 54 protesters and injured 45 in November, while citing COVID-19 regulations, saying that the rallies that they were attending were illegal. And in Malawi, just a few weeks ago, in January this year, at least 7 police officers assaulted a journalist in the capital with pipes and sticks for several minutes after he asked permission to photograph them, enforcing COVID-19 regulations.
Human Rights Watch wants the UN Human Rights Council meeting later this month to commission a new report focusing on states' compliance with their rights obligations in responding to the COVID-19 pandemic, including the impact of restrictions on free speech and peaceful assembly. The UN Human Rights Council was not immediately available for comment on the HRW's report called COVID-19 Triggers Wave of Free Speech Abuse. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, what is the best COVID-19 vaccine for Africa? Stay tuned for an answer to that question after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what would you most likely to accomplish in life, and how close are you to achieving it?
My dream is to be one of the best filmmakers in Uganda and maybe in the world at large. With time and what I've done so far to achieve that, yes, I know I'm still very far, but I've written some scripts already.
To me, as a software developer, I still have a long way. But hopefully, God, I'll be able to make it.
I want to be a voice for the people who I meet and help people generally wherever I find myself. And I think that studying to become a lawyer is in the right direction to achieving that.
I would like to be a very, very great musician, a composer. For now, I'm not close there, but I'm working to get to the level I can actually achieve that.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
The World Health Organization says the Oxford AstraZeneca coronavirus vaccine can save lives and recommends using it even in African countries where variant strains of COVID-19 are circulating. The World Health Organization reports 3.7 million corona infections, including nearly 100,000 deaths. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Since the first case of COVID-19 was identified in Africa nearly 1 year ago, the coronavirus, which causes the disease, has mutated. The continent now is faced with variant strains that are more dangerous and deadly. The World Health Organization says 8 countries have reported a highly contagious variant first found in South Africa, and 6 have seen another variant detected in Britain. In the wake of the mutations, South Africa said this week it would suspend use of the AstraZeneca vaccine because it is not effective in preventing mild and moderate infections. However, WHO Regional Director for Africa, Matshidiso Moeti, notes the vaccine appears to prevent severe cases of COVID-19 and hospitalization. Therefore, she says, its use would be a great boon to Africa's hospitals and healthcare systems, which are greatly overstretched.
If cases remain mostly mild and moderate and don't require critical care, then we can save many lives. So my message is to people, go out and get vaccinated when a vaccine becomes available in your country. Ensuring equitable access to COVID-19 vaccines and sustaining the public health measures are the critical priorities to overcome this crisis.
The South African government has said it will continue to use the AstraZeneca vaccine under trial conditions among older healthcare workers to get better data on its impact on more severe forms of the disease. Meanwhile, Moeti says the international vaccine facility known as COVAX will begin a rollout of some 96 million doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine in Africa later this month. Moeti says the WHO is contacting governments to inform them about the recommendations issued by agency experts for use of the AstraZeneca vaccine.
An analysis of the risks and benefits with regard to using this vaccine needs to be made, and particularly to the neighboring countries, to South Africa, where the interaction is very intense, and we certainly know in several of those this variant is circulating. Well, of course, supporting and advising all the countries in the region.
Moeti also says the WHO was able to procure a small amount of Pfizer vaccine for distribution in 4 African countries. She says, though the quantities are small, they will provide those countries with experience on how to use the vaccine. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Still on COVID, optimism turned to panic as the EU's vaccine rollout plunged into crisis after vaccine makers had cut back deliveries. Reuters reporter Rosanna Philipot explains why the EU's vaccine rollout have been slow with problems compared to other countries.
Today is delivery day, and tomorrow vaccination against COVID-19 is beginning across the European Union.
This was President of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, delivering good news on the 26th of December. She hailed it as a touching moment of unity.
And a European success story.
But within a few weeks, the optimism had turned to confusion, anger, and panic as the EU's vaccine rollout was plunged into crisis.
I got, like many of you, the news today that Pfizer announced delays.
AstraZeneca told the EU on Friday it could not meet agreed supply targets to the end of March.
Vaccine rollouts in the European Union have been slow and fraught with problems compared with other countries.
The European Union asked AstraZeneca to divert supplies from the UK.
And now the companies must deliver. They must honour their obligations.
By the first week of February, the US had given first doses to 11% of its population, according to Our World in Data. Britain, almost 17%. While the EU countries put together just under 4. Why has the EU been so slow to vaccinate? The EU is making more comprehensive checks on vaccines before approval, which had already meant a slower rollout of shots than other countries, such as Britain, which opted to use emergency powers to speed up the process.
Give them away, Derek.
The
European Union has decided against emergency approvals. We know that Great Britain has approved AstraZeneca within 24 hours. I think we did the right thing. It's about trust.
Then, in January, US drug maker Pfizer and Anglo-Swedish AstraZeneca both announced supply cuts to the EU. AstraZeneca cited production problems at its Brussels plant and a 60% fall in supply. There was an immediate public outcry across Europe.
Europe invested billions to help develop the world's first COVID-19 vaccines. And now the companies must deliver.
They are already using the vaccine in Great Britain, in other countries as well.
Not being able to ensure manufacturing capacity is against the letter and the spirit of our agreement.
The delays risk leaving millions in Europe unprotected deep in the winter, just as new, more transmissible variants circulate and hospitals become overwhelmed.
The problem we're facing in the EU regarding the incapacity of two big companies to deliver the necessary doses at the necessary speed has been a major blow, at least for health workers. Missing these deadlines leaves us at the mercy of the pandemic again for an unknown amount of time.
We love to hear what you think about this show. My colleague Nabil Biagio received more interesting comments this week about issues in our news. Over to you, Nabil Biagio.
Thanks, John. Indeed, we have some interesting comments about issues in the news. But we start with a farewell message to our colleague Ayendeng Bior. Martin Manuel Wugol in Uganda writes, "Ayendeng Bior, I shall miss your vocal voice as a confident female journalist. I admired your reporting skills since I started listening to VOA News some time back. I'm motivated by the power of your voice and other objective journalism. I wish you well and please continue to inspire young South Sudanese female upcoming journalists because you put the record straight. Otherwise, congratulations on your new job." Isaac Morgan writes, "Hi VOA, I'm glad to have you on WhatsApp. Thanks for letting me know about South Sudan. I am in Uganda Bidi Bidi refugee settlement, enjoying South Sudan in focus." Samuel Remo in Yale writes, "Hi VOA South Sudan in focus. I was disappointed to hear that pupils in rural areas are not attending examinations. In the defunct Yale River State, there is a high increase of illiteracy in the rural areas from the last 7 years of violence. Most of the children who took refuge in Uganda at the age of 16 years old and below have been married." Another listener writes, "Hello VOA, I'm Emma in Juba. The £1,000 note will not solve the economic problems of South Sudan, but peace will." Peter Goj Anyang Majongdul in Block 3, Bor Town writes, "Hearing about political reform and instability in Sudan is a sign of peace, and I urge my home country to copy this move and bring a lasting solution to the country." Mabor Alat from Rumbek Lake State writes, "Hi John Tanza, I appreciate the VOA teams for the valid news they always give us. The issue of printing 1,000 SSP banknotes in South Sudan is a hidden looting of public money and not to stabilize the economy of the country, as they said." Mal Adao Mal in Bor Town writes, "Hello VOA, I would wish to congratulate the entire VOA management of both South Sudan in Focus and Daybreak Africa for their competencies and accuracy in their newscasts. These two programs keep me more updated. South Sudan has the poorest examination and education system on earth. The ongoing examinations were leaked. This is absurd." Mate Martin Lawrence from WOW writes, "South Sudan's introduction of the 1,000 SSB banknote will not and never help economic growth. It will completely collapse the economic system in the country. 5 and 10 pounds are gone, and very soon 50 SSB will follow. 100 pounds will replace 10 pounds, and 500 pounds will replace 50 pounds. Johnson Peter writes, "Hi VOA, introducing the new 1,000 SSB note by the Central Bank of South Sudan is a total failure of government in controlling the inflation in the country." Isaac Tang in Bentiu Town writes, "I would like to ask our country leaders to urge Uganda's Museveni for what he meant by blue South Sudanese. If we're blue, what about him?" Mading Malwal Alwong from Upper Nile Estates Malakal Town writes,
Our concerns as citizens of South Sudan is that the COVID vaccine would be bought with huge money, and later on one or three people will invest or privatize it, just like the coronavirus testing has become a one-man project where every individual traveling abroad would pay $75, while South Sudanese people are working under a fragile situation and receive salaries of 1,200 SSB that would be sometimes paid after 4 or 6 months. James Roy Majok in Bentiu Town writes, "The good news is that the coronavirus vaccines will arrive in South Sudan next month. This is good news to everyone in the country. The country has been battling the pandemic for some months since it devastated the people around the world. South Sudan is lacking the tools for protection from the pandemic." Justin Waduopai Francis, the executive director of Blending Community Service Organization in Western Equatoria State, Yambio, writes, "Hello, John Tanza. I'm happy with the way you report the events happening in South Sudan. The COVID-19 lockdown should not be the element or way of delaying the full formation of the government. Civil servants have not received salaries for over 6 months now, so the government should look for the measures to save the lives of the poor South Sudanese who are struggling to eat and earn a living in this economic crisis in South Sudan." Alemi from South Sudan writes, "The current lockdown in South Sudan is because the government has run out of cash, so they're using COVID-19 as an excuse. Secondly, the government heard about US President Joe Biden's proposed $1.9 trillion for COVID-19. They think they will get a share from it." Lam Peter Marial from GOG writes, "Hello VOA. Thanks John Tanza for giving us daily news. May God bless you. On the 13th of September 2020, we lost 6 men and 4 women in Uganda at Rhino Camp refugee settlement. They were killed innocently due to a misunderstanding between refugees and the host community. My question goes to South Sudan's government whether there would be a compensation from the UN who carried them or Uganda's perpetrators. We should follow up since the victims are confused about what to do. You are the eyes of the people at the grassroots." Saber Khamis from Yambio in Western Equatoria State writes, "Hi VOA South Sudan in Focus. Allow me to congratulate the media team for the marvelous job they are doing despite the COVID-19 pandemic. My special thanks goes to John Tanza Mabusu, managing editor and co-host of South Sudan in Focus, not forgetting Shaka Saleh with his VOA Straight Talk program."
Thanks, Nabil Biagio. We'd love to hear what you think about this show. Send us your short comments on issues in our news or what is happening in your area. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. We will air your comments every Friday. That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you in a dancing mood as usual with Jamnazi Africa and their song Riziki. Mbona walimwengu mumebadili mipango, usiku sasa imegeuka mchana, na mchana sasa ni kama usiku jamani, yeah. Mi nashangaa, sumbua akili, ulimwengu umepasuka mahali, Mungu alipanga usiku saya kulala, mbona walimwengu mumebadili mipango, usiku sasa imegeuka mchana, na mchana sasa ni kama usiku jamani, yeah. Mi nashangaa. Tafuta usiku, kodi za nyumba muna tafuta usiku, biashara nyingi mwafanya usiku, chai kwa mkate sasa mwauza usiku. We have been listening to Jamnazi Africa with the song Riziki. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for taking your time to listen to this show. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
changa, yeah. Solo.